Welcome back into another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. We're back after a long weekend of football, and we are here to bring you a little week 7 review, going over everything that happened week 7, giving out our helmet stickers for the week of those 2026 NFL draft prospects who we thought did the most to improve their draft stocks. So before we do that, though, James, welcome back in. How was your weekend of football?
Oh, my weekend was outstanding. My dad raised me an Indiana fan, and I always resented him for it because we've never had a good season in my entire life, but it was all worth it.
Here you now, the number 3 team in the nation. So
yep.
Beautiful stuff. Well, let's dive into this slate here. We'll go through just the higher level matchups here before we get into our helmet stickers and just going down the slate on from ESPN here. Let's start with Ohio State, Illinois. Let's just start out with Call the Family. Like, Call the Family this week has to be Arvell Reese.
Yep.
I'm dropping I just actually recorded a film room for my Substack, a film breakdown of this game on Arvell Reese, going up on the Substack tomorrow for paid subscribers. But I think I'm to the point where I'm willing to call this guy the best player of the country. Like, I think I'm there.
Now, are you saying best college football player in the country or best prospect in the 2026 class?
Best prospect in the 2026 NFL class.
Okay.
NFL draft. I mean, so, he's definitely top 3. Like, Peter Woods and Reuben Bain deserve to be in the conversation, but like...
Well, I would definitely put Reese over Peter Woods, I think, but I would probably go Reuben Bain, Jordan Tyson, Arvell Reese. And it really just comes down to a clean positional fit, and like, there's a chance that by no fault of his own, Arvell Reese gets drafted somewhere and just used terribly and is just like a decent player when he could have been elite, you know? I don't think he's going to be like unplayable or bad or anything, but there is like a specific way that you have to use him. But man, the pass rushing juice that he showed this week, I didn't realize he had that in him. And like now all of a sudden you're talking about the elite stack and shed, the elite physicality, plus this dude has a lethal bull rush.
Whew. The bull rush looks like Jared Verse-ish. Like,
oh, yeah.
It looks like Jared Verse.
When he... People say shock in your hands.
Yes.
And it's like a turn of phrase. He epitomizes it. Like, when he makes contact, the opposing blocker shrivels. Like...
Yes.
He's like folds 320-pound grown men with one hand. It's... pound for pound, like the take on ability, I don't know what the comparison. I mean, that's why my comparison for him is Leo Chanel, even though they're slightly different. But it's like those are the two players that are,
yep.
And like Dont'a Hightower, that are off ball linebacker size that you could line up at zero tech and he can just like two gap for you.
Yep. I made the same in the film room I recorded. I brought up Leo Chanel as well, like. He's the most violent player I've seen in the past 4 draft classes since Leo Chenault, easily. The pop in his hands, yeah, it's insane. He went like a 3-play stretch there where like he ragdolled players on like 3 straight plays.
Yeah,
he went from tossing a tight end out of the club to then bull rushing the running back straight back into Luke Altmaier, then to bull rushing Melvin Priestley back. Like just like on a, it was like. A 3-play stretch is like, okay, this is insane.
I know I know exactly what stretch you're talking about because I just watched that game. Like after that 3-play stretch, I wrote down every play Arvell Reese is inventing new ways to contort the human body. Because
yes.
Like he had to have broken the tight end's back
yes.
The way that he folded him. I mean, insane.
Yeah, but it's all like within the confines of the structure of what he's supposed to do. So it's not like he's just being recklessly violent. He's like legitimately doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing and doing it with violence. It's so fun to watch.
In the same motion that like a normal just 5-tech sets the edge and kind of stands in one place, Arvell Reese does that and it's carnage.
Yes, and then
it like ruins the play.
Yes, yes. It's amazing. But I even thought he had some like really awesome cover drafts in this game too.
Yeah.
Like there was one they ran they went empty and they ran like a stick and nod to the tight end. And I thought he was in the hip pocket of the tight end and then punched at the football on time. The tight end made the catch. It was just a heck of a catch by the tight end. But, like, he punched at the football on time as well, like, playing through the hands. Just, like, and even in zone coverage as well, like, you can see his eyes actively searching out, like, crossers coming in behind him. Stuff like, it's that kind of stuff that makes me think, like, yeah, somebody could ruin him. But, like, by, like, asking him to do some stuff that maybe they shouldn't at the NFL level. But, like, he can do like I don't know if there's a box that's unchecked of something that he can't do.
Yeah, that long arm on 3rd and 8 at the Illinois 42 is probably the best long arm that I've seen of the year.
Was that the one where he put Melvin Priestley right back into Altmaier's lap? Yeah,
sacked Luke Altmaier with Melvin Priestley. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Unbelievable.
I do have to say. And this isn't even putting a limitation on Arvell Reese, but we've got to be more creative than to just compare everyone to Micah Parsons, you know?
Yeah, we do.
It's like anytime somebody's got a little bit of positional versatility, they're not Micah Parsons.
No, but I will say for him, he has legitimate juice the way that Parsons, you know what I'm saying? Like, I agree because Parsons only had like 31 inch arms too. And Reese has probably 34, like 33 and a half to 34. Like he's long, but yeah, I definitely agree.
Maybe he's like the power version of Micah Parsons and like Micah Parsons wins with power, but like the power centric version, I guess.
Yeah. I like that. Anything else from this game really stand out to you from either of these teams?
Yeah.
Carnell Tate, those things again.
Yeah. Carnell Tate, another solid game. Jermaine Matthews Jr. just keeps making plays. Like every time I watch Ohio State, he's forcing a turnover, having some game changing play. And, so got to shout out Jermaine Matthews Jr.
He forced two turnovers in this one.
Forced fumble and then the deflected interception. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Davison Igbinosin, second straight shout out. He all of a sudden is like getting targeted a bunch and did have a penalty, but they've stopped calling him as much, which is nice. Like, I don't know. I don't know that he's really improved his skills at the catch point. It's like you're having to fast forward all the way to the end of the play and like look for a flag every time he gets targeted pretty much.
Goal line stand Ohio State had, I was like, they should have thrown a flag on it, Igbinosin on that one.
Yeah.
But I definitely agree though.
But yeah, I think that's all I had from that game.
Awesome. Moving on to the headliner, Indiana, Oregon. I didn't think either of these quarterbacks like played exceptionally well. I thought Mendoza definitely elevated in this game against that competition. And again, even down the stretch, he made that huge turnover. Huge, huge mistake, which I think it was the right read. He just floated it off his back foot instead of driving it out into green grass. But and then came back the next drive and let a go-ahead touchdown drive. So I thought that took some legitimate resilience and some chops. This was the first time I've seen Dante Moore look as off. Like, I don't think Dante Moore, like, understood what he was seeing. Sim pressures were getting after him. He was kind of leaving structure early, I thought, as well. That was a little rough. But again, Mendoza did Mendoza things. Those back shoulders are like clockwork for him at this point. It's automatic. It's automatic.
I was really concerned with Dante Moore and just how immobile he looked out of structure. It's like if he had any pursuit on him, there was pretty much no recourse, and it was at minimum going to be like a 3 or 4 yard sack. I didn't even feel like the pass rush was that overwhelming. It's just anytime he saw a red jersey, it's like he couldn't really escape. And so that concerns me from an NFL draft perspective for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think that after this week, if I had to make a decision now, and let's say that Dante Moore's in this class, which is maybe not looking as likely, I would probably put Dante Moore at QB 3 or 4. I would still have Ty Simpson at 1. And then probably like Sellers, Mendoza would be my 2-3.
Ty Simpson at 1. We're getting there. I would have Ty Simpson at 3, I think, still with Moore there. Because again, like I think, and again, Oregon's playing Rutgers this week, so like the bounce back game should happen. I want to look at their football schedule real fast here. They got Rutgers, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota. So they have a 4-game stretch here where Moore should bounce back, but like I'm more interested in how he responds moving forward than this game in particular. Like I would have liked to have seen a better game here, but we'll see what kind of chops and resilience he has to bounce back after something like this. But I've never struck Moore as like an exceptional athlete. I still think he's like very CJ Stroud. Stroud is probably even a little bit more mobile than Moore. Just a little bit, but I never saw him as a spectacular athlete, but I think you're spot on there. With the mobility stuff, Elijah Surratt, man.
Yeah, we spoke too soon. Maybe
we did. What, and it wasn't just like Elijah Surratt catching back shoulder fades, which because Elijah Surratt does that. But like the screen he took for 37 yards in like the fourth quarter of that game. It's like I don't think I've seen Surratt be that creative with the ball in his hands before. Like stuff like that. It's like, oh, this guy. There's a little bit more to this guy than maybe we thought.
I still just wish his hands on contested targets were a little bit better, like for his size. He's 3 for 11 on contested targets this year, which I didn't even realize. But yeah, he's a really solid player. I think he's just a dependable starter.
Yeah, for sure. He rings like to me is he's going to be like one of those guys who's like, you just move that guy into the slot at the NFL level and he's going to rack up a lot of yards.
Yeah.
Anything else you had mentioned off of the linebackers, the Indiana linebackers?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's really a 2026 draft thing, but like Indiana's got a really interesting scheme where they run three off-ball linebackers most of the time. Isaiah Jones, who had the game-sealing interception, I thought he had a really impressive performance. He's got good size and speed. My other take from this game, though, and it's not really just from this game, it's more like in general, but have we gotten a little bit ahead of ourselves with the Kenyon Sadiq like top 10 ranking? And it's I know it's this class partially, but I just don't know that he's a high enough impact player to take in the top 10.
The production definitely has to meet the road at some point. Like the rubber has to meet the road with production at some point. From an athletic standpoint, he's definitely there. So I even thought about this at the Penn State game as well. Like if you're drafting a tight end high, like the reason you throw the football to tight end in high leverage situations is because they can elevate in ways that wide receivers can't. And he dropped that one along the boundary as well against Penn State of like that situation was like, I need my tight end to go up and get this. And he didn't do it. So I think maybe you're onto something there as well.
And it's like obviously tight ends are going to have a smaller sample size, but right. On his small sample size, you know, I don't think the ball skills are overly reliable. I don't really see any, like, have you seen him run very many routes? I have not. It's a lot of just screens and get him the ball. I love the blocking tenacity and like the natural athleticism and stuff. I just kind of, I feel like I'm not all the way there with Kenyon Sadiq in the way that some people seem to be.
Yeah, I think that's valid. I think the same thing can go for those pass rushers at Oregon as well, man. And I know you and I have kind of been there coming into the season, but Mateo Uiagalelei started out the season, but I didn't see a whole lot of impact in this one. Did you?
No. And I thought this was going to be the game that we saw that with the right tackle and right guard situation that Indiana has. Yeah. Amari Washington got the right guard one time, but yeah, I don't, Mateo just is stylistically is not really for me. And we've talked about that 270-pound pass rushers that don't win with power.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I don't have anything else to talk about. I think, you know, Bryce Becker is Bryce Becker. He's always going to be like that early to mid day three guy that I'm still going to love no matter what. But, Amari Farrell, I continue to like, I'm starting to come around on the safety classes. Like this safety class is really good. Like there's a lot of safeties I would draft that could come into the NFL and be pretty decent starters.
Yeah, I've liked this safety class since the summer. I will say, I mean, Amari Farrell, he's got to stop busting coverages, but like he gave up that that 44-yard touchdown on the boot, you know?
Yeah.
Lost his assignment. So I love the physical traits and the ball skills, but he needs to start processing it a little bit faster for me to get fully on board with him.
Yeah. All right. Florida A&M, from a 2026 perspective, all of the statistical leaders are 2027 guys. Mario Craver, Jaden Paul, DJ Lagway, leading passer, rusher, receiver in this one. I thought Chase Bezontis had another good game in pass pro, Texas A&M guard, who I've been relatively high on in this one. Anything else from A&M perspective, from Florida perspective here?
So this game is actually still on my list, so I don't really have any takeaways. I do have a question, though.
Uh-huh.
Would you draft Cassius Howell or Romello Height?
Ooh, probably Howell. I do like Romello Height. Romello Height, for me, though, neither of them have excellent power profiles. Howell's more dense, though. Like, I think Howell has a better, denser body type. Howell has cleaner hands, more, and is probably more explosive. I would say he's more explosive than Height as well. A lot of Height's pressures and sacks are like high effort, coming back into the play kind of stuff. Not so much this game. I thought he was really awesome this past game, but I would draft Howell over Height still, I think. Even though Howell's arms are 30 inches long, I think I'd still go that route.
I think I'd probably lean Height.
Really?
Yeah. I finished studying him today. I'm a really big fan.
Does it worry that he doesn't have an ass? Like, his lower half is narrow.
Oh, yeah. No,
he's
like
very narrow.
Him and David Bailey, I'm not drafting to play run defense. So, like,
no.
Yeah. Once you accept that and just, you kind of like set your cap at an early third round grade, then you can just enjoy it.
See, that's what I like about Howell, though, is I think he can come down to pulling guards and stuff like that still.
Yeah. I mean, Romello Height, he's listed at 240. NFS had him at 228.
Yeah, he's skinny. He's very small. All right, Texas-Oklahoma Red River rivalry. I'm willing to just punt on Mateer till next year. I've kind of been in that boat as well, because like even the Michigan game, I thought like this still looks a lot like Washington State tape, where he's missing crossers that he should be getting his eyes to immediately. And he's still like late to get the ball out, but he's a good enough athlete to extend until guys open into second windows and stuff like that. But like, why are these not first window throws? But this one, and I thought like the turnover variance got him in this one, like where before is like, these are still turnover worthy plays. They're just not coming down with him. He probably could have thrown 5 picks in this game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was brutal. Brutal stuff. And it's a lot of stuff too. It's like, sure, you can blame the thumb, but a lot of the stuff is his eyes. So, like, unless you want to blame the thumb in the regard of, like, well, he couldn't practice on the field as much to get game, like, to get live simulation before the game, like, I would understand it. But, like, there's a lot of the stuff that has nothing to do with this thumb that is on this tape as well. I'm willing to punt Mateer till next year.
It's, like, all stuff that we said he could get punished for, you know, based on that Michigan game. That was really impressive, but there was a lot left on the field, a lot of turnovers left on the field.
Yeah, yep. So, fun athlete, but again, this is still looks like the Wazoo tape. But again, I'm willing to take a chance on the tools, especially after the Cam Ward thing, right? Like, Mateer now looks like Ward's last year at Wazoo under Ben Arbuckle as well. And again, Mateer's obviously still with Ben Arbuckle, but like, maybe at some point they need to, that divorce needs to happen, and Mateer honestly could transfer to Miami too. Like, they always look for quarterbacks in the portal, so like that could happen. But like, this looks very much like the redshirt junior year of Cam Ward, where the tools are awesome, but they're still a lot like, dude, what are you doing? And then he transferred, cleaned it up a little bit. I still thought Ward had a lot of turnover worthy stuff on his tape last year too. Yeah. But Trey Wisner was back in this game, man. And I thought he played pretty well. He rushed for 94 yards. Looked really nice. Again, he's kind of one of those outside zone merchants a little bit, which I'm a little skeptical of in their transition to the NFL. But Wisner's a meaner running back than most of those outside zone merchants, though. So I think I'm okay with it a little bit. But he played really well for his first game back. That Texas defense, and honestly, the Oklahoma defense still played really well in this game. I mean, they only gave up 23 points. But the Texas secondary played played really well in this one too. Malik Muhammad, who neither of us were really high on coming in the summer, had two picks in this game. One was a deflection ball up in the air, and the other one was like on a, they tried to run a Seattle concept out on him, like at the end of half, at the end of the half, and he threw a pick. And then, but yeah, pretty strong defensive game from both sides here.
What do you think of Arch?
I don't know, dude. I thought he still looked a little sloppy. Still looked a little sloppy. Yeah, I don't know, man. The Arch stuff is... I mean, he still wasn't very good in this game. I mean, he's getting better every week, but like, it still wasn't great stuff. Maybe it's to the point now we got to start talking about like Steve Sarkisian's offense, and maybe it isn't as friendly as people want to say it is as well. But... yeah, I also don't think the Texas line offensive line is particularly good. And you know, I watched Trevor Goosby in this one, too. Do you think that Goosby's stiffer than maybe we've given him credit for in the past? I thought, I was like, he's pretty upright, man.
You know, I thought he was pretty fluid in 2024. But I do kind of see that. I'm so lost on this tackle class. There's no one that I really like, to be honest.
Yeah. No.
Because I don't really like Francis Mauanoa as a tackle. I like him mm-hmm. as a guard. And it kind of like just have swung and missed on everyone else.
I still like Fano, but that's about it for me there. I'm with you.
Yeah, Fano had a nice game this week. The Utah tackles, I mean, especially Fano, it's just a big selling point from him last year was how impactful he was in the run game. And I see way fewer finishes on tape this year from Fano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alabama-Missouri. Alabama squeaked this one out. Ty Simpson threw for 200 yards in this game. From a Missouri perspective, they played a lot better than I thought they would. They probably should have at least tied that game there. I thought Prabula kind of sold down the stretch. Ty Simpson was fairly sharp again in this one. What were your bigger takeaways?
Main player that I was looking for was Damon Wilson, who mm-hmm. I really like, the Missouri edge rusher. He had a solid game, was in consideration for a helmet sticker, 5 pressures, 2 sacks. He has kind of taken over for Zion Young, who I think is solid, but just a kind of limited upside as a pass rusher. So, yeah, the Missouri edge rushers were actually kind of my number one appointment viewing with this matchup.
Mm-hmm. So I watched Damon Wilson, too, and both of his sacks came against that right tackle, who was a turnstile in this game. But I did see Wilson come down and take on a guard and have a really nice blow-up rep in the run game, too. So that was cool. In this one as well. It was honestly a really good defensive game here. What are your takes on Jam Miller, man? Because I'm not a huge fan of Jam Miller.
Yeah, I haven't studied him too much individually because what I've seen from him has not been overly impressive to like lead me to go, you know, watch him. So yeah, that would be my answer.
Yeah. All right, Texas Tech, Kansas. I texted some buddies about this game. Like, that Texas Tech defensive line feels like they're just playing a game of who gets to the quarterback first every snap. Like, it's unbelievable to watch. David Bailey is maybe one of the most reactive, like one of the best reactive athletes I've ever seen in my life.
It's unfair having to block this edge duo with David Bailey and Romello Height. I mean, the overall win rate between the edge duo on an average game is like literally 30%. I mean, I think they both have a pass rush win rates of like 28%. So like 1 out of every 3 times, each of those guys are winning. And then when you combine that, it's more than 1 out of 3. And it's not just that it's so often, it happens so fast. Mm-hmm. Average time to pressure, David Bailey and Romello Height are both under 3 seconds, which is like elite time to pressure. And they, you know, they rank near the top of the league in pressure rate. So yeah, we'll talk about David Bailey, but this was a dominant showing from the Texas Tech pass rush.
Yeah. And I continue to really like Jacob Rodriguez. Like I understand this guy's going to go day 3. I know it because of his size and like athletic limitations a little bit, but like The linebacker position is the one position I'm willing to accept that a little bit, because you had just like, if you're a good reactive athlete, then like you're going to make plays at the NFL level. And like the dude is just, has his reactive guts are just so good, man. I like Jacob Rodriguez.
You know who I really like, who unfortunately got injured, is Skylar Gil-Howard. So I was like going back and watching, studying Romello height today, and I kept noticing number zero, and then I looked him up and saw that he had just gotten injured this week. I think it might be for the season. I know it's serious, so that sucks. But he's got some real pass rushing juice.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And then I like, you add in like Lee Hunter. They've got some interior guys that can get pressure. I mean, it's uh-huh. I would say probably the most overwhelming defensive front in college football.
Yeah, again, it's like a race to the quarterback. It's like they're playing a game. It's like they have a competition going on. Just
and it
like AJ Holmes is another defensive tackle in that room that I really like as well. Just like they've got guys across the board.
The same exact thing happens every game, regardless of who the competition is and who they're just like an inevitable force. You give them the best tackle duo in college football. Caleb Lomu, enjoy a 8.0 pass blocking grade or whatever.
It's
insane.
All right, let's speed run through the rest of these. South Carolina, LSU, felt like both these quarterbacks played pretty disappointing games. Nuss threw two picks. Didn't feel like Sellers took over a game. The thing I'm waiting for Sellers is I need to see that, like, killer, I'm going to elevate my team, even if the talent around me is subpar kind of performance. He hasn't had it yet. I was really hoping we'd come out this week. He's got four more games in a row here against SEC top-tier opponents. So, like, there's still time to come out, but, like, to me, the clock is ticking now on Nuss to be like, or not on Nuss, but on Sellers to be like, at what point are we going to get to the point, though, where, like, you prove that you are this, like, you are the alpha, you know?
Yeah. I'm just getting flashbacks to all the quarterbacks that have, like, bad stats and box scores that I've defended. Because, like, no, actually, the tape is better. And, like, how many of those guys ever end up actually having good box scores?
Yeah. So this one, I did think the tape was a little bit better,
and I tweeted out,
but like he had two gorgeous deep balls that were both that registered 0 for 2 on his box score. So I do take that away. Like his deep ball touch is awesome. Like his deep ball is very good, but man, he's late a lot. And it feels like he's regressed over the past couple of weeks where I started to feel like, oh, he's starting to throw the ball in rhythm. He's starting to get his eyes to these backside digs, to these alert posts, to these things. And now it's like, what happened? A little bit. And again, LSU's defense is the best defense he's going to face all year. But again, those are the games I want to see him elevate his play in. And it just didn't happen in this one.
Yeah. Mansoor Delane had a really nice game.
Rinse, repeat.
Yeah. I think, I guess there's really no conversation to be had until Jermon McCoy comes back. But yeah, Delane would be my cornerback one at the moment for sure.
Yeah, he's playing out of his mind. People forget that, like, we've mentioned on the podcast, but he came into to last season with top 50 grades at Virginia Tech before he got hurt. So yeah, he continues to just stack up performances as well. I think we can skip over Tennessee, Arkansas. Chris Brazel didn't really have the game that we were anticipating. Maybe not. I do have a helmet sticker coming up, so we'll talk about this. But I thought Quincy Rhodes' point of attack stuff was really good in this one. The pass rush stuff still feels like he's developing some instinct, some savvy there. But like the point of attack stuff, man, is really awesome in the run game from Quincy Rhodes. Did you get around to this game? You're muted.
I feel like he was getting moved off the line pretty consistently, honestly. And I came away pretty disappointed with his pass rushing plan overall. And I just, I feel like he is a one trick pony at this point. Like the spin move worked a couple times against Lance Hurd, but bull rush goes nowhere and like doesn't really have any other moves that are repeatable to speak of. So I think probably a 2027 guy, although he is very talented.
He's very talented, but I tend to agree that we're probably on that same page there with Quincy Rhodes. Again, I have a helmet sticker coming back to a Tennessee offensive lineman in this game. Michigan USC, Mekhi Lemon does it again.
Yeah.
Wayman Jordan got hurt, dude.
Mekhi Lemon, he like owns that 5x5 patch of grass in the back left corner of the end zone.
Yes, he does.
And like when if you target him in that zone, he has 100% catch rate, I think.
That's amazing. I love it. I love it. I love it. All right. Trying to find a game to talk about here. Going back through. See, well, let's just get to helmet stickers, man. We hit all the big ones. They front loaded it on ESPN's website here. So let's get into helmet stickers here. So I'll let you go first with your first helmet sticker.
All right, let's stick with the Texas Tech edge rushers. And my first helmet sticker is going to be David Bailey, who has performed well enough this year that you could have, you know, justified giving him a helmet sticker pretty much every week of the season. He has 44 pressures and 9 sacks, which would be a good full year for most players. And the reason that I wanted to highlight him for his week 7 performance against Kansas, 11 pressures, 3 sacks, didn't have a forced fumble. But what I thought was most impressive about David Bailey over the last 2 weeks particularly is that he has shown a lot more of a power profile. Back to his Stanford tape, I thought there were like 2 or 3 long arm wins and they weren't very dominant. It was just kind of, you know, stab, push the pocket a little bit. This year, it's still not his primary move set at all. I think he's like 17% of his pressures are with power this year. But when he uses a long arm, it is either winning dominantly, winning decisively, or he is creating some real knockback on that initial strike. And, you know, the rep ends. There's a lot of long arm reps where maybe he doesn't get a chance to fully, you know, finish the rep. But I just think his tape has shown so much more power. And that was the main thing that I wanted to see from him as a pass rusher. Still have the concerns, which is that he is not an impact on early downs. They play him on early down some, but he gets moved off the line of scrimmage, doesn't have great awareness. So pure third down player for me, but I think he can do that at an elite level.
Yeah, 11 pressures, like on a week-to-week basis. Like I think it's back-to-back weeks now he's had 11 pressures, which is an outrageous number. My first one is going to be Texas safety Jelani McDonald. So Jelani McDonald is a player who I had a scout tell me coming into the season, like, watch out for this guy. Another one of these safeties in this class. And Jelani McDonald in this game against Oklahoma, I came away feeling like this is one of the more rangy single highs that I think I've seen in college football, and especially in this draft class. So far this season, again, I really like Kamari Ramsey. I think Kamari Ramsey is probably the best single high in the class. But Jelani McDonald has a lot of range, and at 6'2", 199 too, so he's got good length. Will come down and play apex as well. He'll come down in a robber role. He'll play in the box a little bit too. A really good tackler. No missed tackles in this game. Had 1 stop tackle and 7 total tackles. And then coming out of the second half of that game there, I thought he baited John Mateer very well. He should have had 2 picks on that first drive. Like, he dropped an easy pick 6 on that first drive come out of the half and baited him on another one of the same, looked like the same concept as a stick right on the numbers again. But I like the range. I like the versatility to play single high, to come down and into the slot. So Jelani McDonald is moving me a little bit here.
Awesome. I'd never heard of him until you texted him to me. So he will definitely be moving up my list. Are we snaking it or is it my turn?
We can snake it. That's fine. My second one is going to be Utah pass rusher John Henry Daly, guy with 3 first names here. I guess Daly's not really a first name, but we'll just call him John Daly. There we go, like the golfer. John Henry Daly is a bit of an older prospect because he's your typical Utah college football player where those guys do their Mormon missions and then they go to college. So he is a 2021 NFL draft or not NFL draft 2021 recruit. So graduated in 2021 and then went on a Mormon mission for 2 years before going to BYU, transferred from BYU to Utah. So he's technically a third-year junior, but he's in his 5th year removed from high school. But, dude, he's a good football player, and I think he has a nuanced way of winning. both with a little bit of bend and a little bit of power. I was like kind of shocked at how much I liked him coming into the game. You know, you had mentioned off air that you thought he was just kind of a tryhard, and then you turned on his tape and you were like, wait, no, there's actually something here. PFF has him charted at 9 sacks on the season now, 9 adjusted sacks on the season. This game, he's charted at 6 pressures, 2 sacks, 4 hurries, 4 stop tackles. He got after it, listed at 6'4", 255. And again, I thought he did it in a variety of ways, both winning off from the outside shoulder and coming back across the face and with some power inside too. Really strong run defender. So John Henry Daly is going to be a guy who I'm going to have on my radar because I genuinely think he could declare this year, even though he's got another year left of eligibility.
Yeah, I really like players like him who every rush has like both a blend of power and speed. Even when he's attacking the outside track, he's still rushing with power. And so he's kind of like centralizing his force right on that outside armpit. And it's like he keeps all of his options on the table. And then he had that 6 spin move, which I was not expecting. So yeah, excited to get into more of his tape as well. My second helmet sticker is going to be Georgia linebacker CJ Allen. We have talked about CJ Allen as being not having a bad year, but a little bit disappointing, underwhelming. I thought he had his best game of the season, week 7 against Auburn. 6 stop tackles, 1 forced fumble, had an insane pass breakup. He was in the middle hook. He connects to a drag route, runs with it across the field. The receiver throttles down, redirects. He mirrors it perfectly, gets into the passing lane, gets a pass breakup. There was a lot of good QB spy work on Auburn's offense. He has, you know, the sideline range to flow across the field with all of the Eric Singleton jet sweeps. And I do think he's improved his take-on ability this year a little bit. His anchor when a blocker does connect to him still isn't the best, but there is more violence and proactivity engaging with blocks this year, I think.
Yeah. I did a film room on CJ Allen after the Tennessee week, cause I wanted to see how he handled being stretched as wide as Tennessee stretches. And I was left a little disappointed. So it's good to hear that from one of the players who was the consensus linebacker 1 coming in the nation and still a consensus top 3. But what I'm seeing from the 2 Ohio State guys, I might have from linebacker 3 right now. We'll see how that stacks up as well once we get to the midseason, which we're approaching pretty quickly. All right. Did you snake that already? Was that your second in a row?
I got to snake it.
Yeah.
So my final helmet sticker is Arizona safety Traydon Stukes. This is somebody who actually Ryan Roberts shouted him out to me. I know he's a big fan. And I watched his tape in 2024, which was only 195 snaps because he got injured. But he played mostly nickel for most of his career. This is his 6th season at Arizona. This year, he's kind of transitioning into more of a split role between nickel and safety. And he's got the man coverage versatility. The size and the athleticism gives him the versatility to play multiple DB spots at a high level. He had a really good performance in week 7 against BYU. 3 targets, 1 reception for 16 yards, had an interception and a pass breakup, 6 tackles. He is extremely physical in run support. His interception was incredible. He blanketed a deep corner route, turned his head at the last perfect second, got the interception. He had a pass breakup where he was in quarters. He let a deep post cross his face, so he was out leveraged, but he recovered, laid out, dived into the passing lane, and forced the incompletion. So just a really well-rounded performance from Traydon Stukes in both phases, and I'm interested to see how he adjusts to this slight change in positions.
Love it. I love it. Your description of him made him sound like Corey Trice out of Purdue from a few years ago.
Yeah, I could kind of see that.
Yeah.
Corey Trice like Stukes better.
Okay, yeah, cool. Corey Trice was one of the best tackling corners that I've ever seen in my life. Dude could never stay healthy though. Still can't with the Steelers. All right, my last helmet sticker here. I mentioned a Tennessee offensive lineman, and it's one that we've talked about off air a little bit. I don't know if we've ever mentioned him on the podcast, but their right guard, Wendell Moe, Arizona transfer. Speaking of trading Stukes, their Arizona transfer to Tennessee this year. A really squatty body type. So I don't necessarily love the body type and like the athleticism is what you'd expect for a guy of his size. But I still like the pacing of like him when he's pulling in this game as well. He got out on the perimeter and leveled a defensive back on a screen too. So like, was able to get out. So he can get out in space and move a little bit. I don't think he's an exceptional athlete. But when he is frame to frame with you, he's really strong, impossible to work through the chest of. Had some really awesome run blocking reps in this game as well. So Wendell Moe, definitely just by body type vibes and guys that tend to look like him tend to get drafted on day three. So I think he'll be a day three pick. But he's a guy that I think that can go into a scheme that's going to ask him to play in a phone booth a little bit more and be a spot starter and maybe even grow into an eventual starter at the NFL level.
I've been really impressed with his hands. Yeah, he's just really rock solid unless you ask him to cover too much ground in the run game. But even then, like you said, I mean, I'll put all of his pulls from this past game on the screen. I think he was like 5 for 5 in terms of executing his assignment, and a couple of them he had a decisive finish. So
yeah, he sure did. He had a nice hip torque on one of them. Yeah. So really fun player there. But that's it, man. That's our 6 helmet stickers for this week. Our nice little breakdown there. We'll dive deeper into week 8 of college football as we get down to the line here, and we'll come up with some more content through the rest of these 2 weeks here for you, or 2 episodes this week as well for you. But James, you got anything for the people before we get out of here?
That's all I got.
That's all I got as well. Until next time, guys. Thank you so much for listening. And this has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. See ya.